So I have said on this show, I think previously, that I am a, this is the one area I'll claim this term authoritatively, that I am a semantic conservative. Now, even amongst semantic conservatives, I suppose I may be heterodox, meaning I am very pro the invention of new words, the incorporation of new words into our lexicon formally. But I am opposed to, or I shouldn't say opposed, well, no, I'm opposed to the rapid integration of new usages or novel usages of terminology that already exists. I love words. I adore words. I think in some cases, not all, protecting words is more important than protecting individual people. Like if you had to protect a word, I think you can save many more lives than if for somehow, let's say if you didn't use this word, this person just spontaneously combusted, or this is the new definition of the word, and all of society has to kind of rearrange itself to affirm something contradictory of that which was previously held, then that person, I probably would just go ahead and let that person spontaneously combust. A, because I didn't, I don't think I'd pick up a gun and kill them, mind you, but if they were going to naturally be destroyed. We've talked about on this show before, my most cogent example of this is how we, and I blame us in America, it may not be our fault, but I'm going to blame us anyway. We'll take the blame on ourselves as a nation. We're on the way to destroying the word literally by frequent misuse, meaning people just kept using it for just for emphasis, where it still could mean figuratively, which in many ways is the antonym of literally. So it was used so often as such that common use then dictates in terms of how dictionaries work or semantic collections, the understanding of meaning in language. One of the things that sets us apart from most other species of creature upon this planet, as far as we can tell, that it adopted the novel definition, which contradicted the previous definition. And to me, that was not like, oh, isn't it funny how language changes and evolves? That was like, no, that's a devolution. Like, we just, now this word no longer has the utility it once had. And now it's just, it's a vague euphemism. It's an emphasis word. It's like it's lost its power. We've literally like castrated the word. And I was like, so that was a failure. So then that let me know, that put, I don't know if I never even thought about this before. It put off alarm bells in my head that it was like, oh, we can destroy words that are useful. So like we can destroy useful things. And so for the first time in my life, I don't know, maybe in my 20s, I was like, I understand conservatism. And I saw somebody wrote a cute quote the other day. I don't know who it is, find it, quote it, saying liberalism is the holding to the idea that things can be improved and we should, and that conservatism is that things can be ruined and we should protect them. And that every cogent mind holds both of those piece by piece, right? We want, we don't want our food to spoil because we could poison ourselves and others. So there's a conservative instinct that constantly exists, but we also get bored of eating the same thing all the time. So we want to buy different foods and make new recipes. I tried to choose a hopefully non-inflammatory example. Anyway, all that to say, as I have to state my bias ahead of time as far as being a semantic conservative. And just laying that out so people know that these things exist, because sometimes I say that and people stare at me and they're like, I don't know what you're talking about, and I don't care enough to ask.
Well, I think literally is hyphenated now. It's literally actually is how you
Yeah, you've got a double emphasis, and it still can mean figurative. Literally, actually, my mom is trying to kill me. You're like, she should be up on criminal charges.
Well, I have always admired your vocabulary. I'm often hearing words from you that I am like, oh, I'm gonna look that up. So part of this, I didn't look it up. How many words are there in the English language? Millions.
Oh gosh, I have no idea. That's a good question. That makes me want to know that.
There's bunches, and many of them have multiple definitions. I'm sure we'll get into that today. And
Yeah.
that's what you're often citing is sort of what the definition is. And in your example, with somebody who's spontaneously combusting, I'm thinking of the classic ethical railroad thing. So if there's a
Yes.
If there's a burning dictionary on one track and a person tied to the other, you're going to put the dictionary out, is what I'm hearing.
Yes, as long as the dictionary represents the English language, as opposed to just the dictionary itself, I will happily burn all the dictionaries except for one to save an equal amount of people. Or maybe at least half, I don't know, like a 1 to 3, like for every 3 people, maybe we got to figure out the dictionary to human ratio. Because if we destroy all the dictionaries physical, that means ultimately we will be victim to whatever AI tells us words mean will be the new thing that words mean, and we'll cease actually to think for ourselves. Won't that be fun?
That'd
Give
be
me a
convenient. Very
yeah.
convenient. So I, as a fellow wordsmith,
Yeah.
certainly appreciate language and words, and also agree that if they devolve entirely, then the English language, or any language, probably ceases to have meaning. I'm also very curious about the nature of the English language. I was actually just reminded of a book, Braiding Sweetgrass, which talks about the Potawatomi language and how sort of verb based or movement based or change based it really is, and how a lot of things in English are fixed. Even like talking about a bay of water, where we're like, no, it's a bay, it's a fixed thing, and they would in their and in their language everything's relational. It's like, oh no, that's just the water having a relationship with the roots of the trees and all this stuff. So I think I'm fascinated by concepts like that, like like kind of the even branching out of where we are today. Most is more of a definitional, let's stay within the English language that's talking about these definitions. So I'm super curious of that, the highest level of like, well, what is the nature of language and how do we use it, and how does that differ between different cultures? I think that's absolutely fascinating, and sort of not assuming the paradigm of language itself. And so in that way, I'm very curious. But I also agree with you that there needs to be some consistency for it to have utility. And I find myself, especially merging with my journeying through wokedom, to be extremely liberal and quick to just jump on what sort of is being touted as like the, I don't know, the right definition, I guess, or the least harmful definition would be one way to say it. That's the ostensibly, I think, what a lot of it's trying to
I've
get
seen
at.
that invocation.
And you and I, a frame I hold that I think you and I more or less agree on as a very simple frame is dignity and agency. Now, the applications of that are wildly different. So that could be invoked here, right? Like, how do we achieve dignity and agency through the lens of the English language, is a question I'm holding. And that said, clearly there's just wild disagreement, perhaps to the point of violent disagreement about
I think so.
the way we use language. And you're, I think, much more deeply immersed in that than I am in terms of being out there and talking to different people on comment threads and things like that. So.
Yeah, that's really what made me, and this is something I've been pondering for a while. I think I've talked to you about a couple times on text or whatever, but then it came up a lot in this past week where I was having conversations with multiple people at the same time, and multiple people in a particular thread. We were discussing the ethics of abortion, and in it, I was like, we were arguing over the use of the word, which one? Gosh, essentially, whether a person, that's it, person, right? And so, in order to, I was like, well, I'm using person here because it, a human being from fertilization on fits the definition of the word person in English. And they were like, hogwash, what is it, hog swaddle, mollycoddle, I don't know, whatever archaic slang they were not using. And so, in order to demonstrate that I was using this word in good faith and not making quote unquote emotional appeal, which I guess was somehow inappropriate in their regard. Well, it's very popular in some corners. I used the dictionary. I used multiple dictionaries. I literally quoted like 4 different dictionaries, and I was like, person, living human, individual. So I was like, every human from fertilization on is living human and is a living human, not just like living and human, like cells in your body are alive and they're human cells. So you could like sort of start parsing things out. I was like, no, this is a living individual human with some set of genetics, its own body of in various stages of development, et cetera, et cetera. So person is completely appropriate unless you're going to start talking about personhood as a philosophical concept, but that doesn't really shape what words are, what words mean in the language that we're using. And multiple people were like, that's ridiculous. Like, what a ridiculous thing to cite. Keep citing the dictionary as though that tells us what words mean. And I was full on like, and I'm not usually at a loss for words. That was me being taking a little bit of dead air because I was like, wait a second. Well, how else do we determine within a language, like within our language, especially at the advanced level we are in terms of like our ability to communicate across, like you've talked about, across cultures. That's where I think definitions become all the more important, and like semantic understandings, and to be able to reference like, well, how do you know you're using that word correctly? Because then if there are no boundaries, let's say there's no conservatism, then any way you use any word is completely legitimate. Now, of course, to me, that would destroy language because language has to be like, even if the concept of the bay just means the place where the water comes in for a semicircular rest to kiss the land, within a culture, people would have to have the same understanding of that, or they would literally be like the Tower of Babel, right? And all language is being ruptured. And so I started to notice, I was like, oh, this is an echoing theme we've talked about, where certain proponents of systemic racism say that only you have to have a certain amount of power. I don't know what the degree of power is. No one's ever defined that, but some degree of power, socially or in terms of construct, I don't know, whatever. Something there's an exceptional thing that then makes racism not applicable in the fashion it was in the past semantically. And then I was like, okay, that's one. And then I was like, oh, and they kind of read, there was kind of a redefinition of what white supremacy means. And then there was sort of a, and so I was like, oh man, there's a lot of things that we've had conversations about that actually rely on either brand new definitions or novel in terms of the history of a word, right? Talk about that in the pronouns episodes in terms of gender, right? Where gender, like the idea of anyone being able to change their gender, which is used synonymous with sex throughout most English history and common use today, still is used as such. It proposes the new concept is the most important concept. So I started going, well, wait, there's a really big something here. So my question, man, I've been thinking about what this question is over and over again. I still don't even know what it is. So I guess we have to question the question.
By the way, real quick, quick, probably incomplete research, because I was curious too. Like it sounds like just over a million words in English, and that includes all different kind of variations. So that's the big number. Maybe about 170,000 in current use.
Wow. That's a lot. It's a lot to keep track of. It's a lot to hold on to. And I think I didn't know that people were just like, dictionaries don't count as a reference for proper word use. That was astonishing to me. And all of a sudden I felt either like these people are crazy, which is very rarely helpful when trying to dialogue with somebody, or I'm somehow behind on the times and there's a new thesis out in the world that says dictionaries are not going to be your primary source for validating what a word is. Now, some of this is just maybe how I grew up in education. We were just talking about differing modes of education this morning as relates to our daughters and their schooling. But when I was a kid, throughout my life, and even on into adulthood, or in playing Scrabble for grown-ups, whatever, still to this day, but like if you have a claim on you're using a word and someone's like, I don't think what that word. That's how you use that word. I don't think that word means that. They're like, oh, I thought it meant blah, 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 blah. And you're like, I don't know. The way the two of you would come to an agreement would be literally to go to the dictionary. Or if you have a real dispute about it, you'd go to multiple dictionaries. I tend to favor the Oxford because I think their system of citations is like the most comprehensive and it's just the clearest. So they'll tell you, well, in 1435 is the oldest citation we found written wise of this word. And then in 1580, this new thing, which seems to alter the definition, came about. And I was like, that's
They go
to me,
into
they're
the
the,
etymology of it, right? I mean, it's really crazy.
to actually break it down. So you can have a sense of like what has the most heft, like what has the most heft in terms of like what the proper thing, because it could be a later definition. Or sometimes it's figuring out whether you use the word wrong, the dictionary would be a primary source. But that is no longer the case for certain people. Not I'm not, certainly enough in this thread that I was like, oh, this is like a recurring theme that people are like rejecting dictionaries for use in semantics. So fascinating to me. And this concretized my question, which was essentially, is progressivism, what's the word? It's so comprehensive. It's such a thing, but like, is the dictionary, like, are we over the dictionary? Are we done with the dictionary? Is maybe the simplest version of the question, but what that really means in unpacking it, maybe that's the succinct version we can use for our podcast episode. But like, are progressives or is progressivism in its inclination for improvement, is it seeking to establish an entirely new system of semantic understanding. I would even suggest, is my question is it really like, is it a topsy-turvy one? And this is very similar to what happened in 2020, as far as I can tell, where people proposed a topsy-turvy version of science, which is people started elevating expert opinion above like systematic surveys or meta-analyses of RCTs, whereas science for quite a long time has kind of had it the other way, where evidence and result and the most tightly contained result, and then the survey of the most intense, like the intense survey of the most intense result, is that which gives us the best thing closest to quote unquote scientific knowledge. And expert opinion is the lowest. But in 2020, 2021, 2020, all the way to 2023, most people seem to function on the opposite. So they flip the paradigm upside down. Novel, it's always worth exploring. And I was like, oh, is the same thing, has the same thing been done for the dick for like semantic understanding, where you flip it upside down. So where the newest definition is now the dominant definition, whereas previously, whatever has been used the most amount of time or is used by the most amount of people really kind of would establish what semantics would tell you is the most relevant thing, because that's how language works. What the most people understand about what this word means and can demonstrate such too in our modern world. So anyway, I know it's kind of an elaborate question, but I actually think it underpins, I don't know, I think at least six or seven topics we've talked about. And again, I always come to you as like the person I know and love and trust the most, who's also the closest into in the progressive community. So it was like the phenomenon, it's something you must have witnessed or at least thought about in subconsciously. And then maybe you actually know internally when those dialogues are held or those arguments are had internally within the sphere, like how do people phrase that? Like, is it a deliberate rejection or is it something that's kind of just developed over time?
Well, thanks for saying that. I appreciate that. I think, I mean, if we just briefly-ish unpack like the word progressive, that it seems to go hand in hand, you know, with, as you said, hopefully progressivism is attempting to improve things.
Yeah, that would be the
Certainly
hope,
to
right?
change, certainly to change things, and hopefully to improve things. And
Yeah.
we know that's not a straight line, and we don't can't always predict the
No, gosh,
impact.
there's a lot of stumbles. Yeah.
And though, so it would seem like fair game from my point of view that language would be on the table as
Yeah.
potentially to change. A lot, well, I don't want to say a lot, but certainly one thing that comes up is the very nature of a colonial language like English and how some of these terms came to be. Like I said, maybe even looking at different paradigms. We talked briefly about like oral versus written
Yeah.
traditions, what it, and how does that affect us? You know, just not, I'm not an expert, I haven't studied it deeply, but I'm just really curious, like how does that affect the human vessel, right? You know, it's easy to assume
Yeah.
that, like, well, you know, I speak English and this is how language works. And it's like, well, not necessarily. If you were born in
Yeah.
a completely different culture with completely different ways, this would probably seem pretty far out and foreign. So I think it's fascinating, right? Because, you know, when we met, I was in journalism school, which was a hardcore exercise in
Yeah.
doing things a certain way. I was
Yeah.
helping my daughter finish a book report and reminded of that this morning, and like how much red ink there was and how you would immediately fail if you misquoted a source or misspelled a source's name. But there was a rigidity there that
Yeah.
I sort of did peak, maybe with the exception of like a PhD, peak like rigidity in terms of learning the English language.
Yeah.
You know, and it's fascinating. I mean, politically, I guess I find myself just so open now to the idea of changing things. And you know, one of the things I do here is unpack that. I'm like, well, that seemed to come about, you know, in the last 10 years, diving super deep in mostly, I would say, racial justice, but other forms of, you know, looking at injustices and joining movements, often pretty extreme movements. To look at those. And in those movements, in many cases, the power dynamics are intentionally shifted. So the folks that are marginalized and sort of broader society have more power in those. And that's who's I feel calling the shots in this category, like reevaluating how we use language. And I feel like I just accepted a lot of that. Some of that journey, especially for a white dude, is I think rooted in guilt. So there's some emotional aspect of like, oh gosh, you must be right. I must be wrong. I'm gonna go and like change my ways. And I
That's, I mean,
don't,
that's a power, that's the power of guilt and shame.
right. And I don't actually think that's healthy. I think it's healthy in the sense that it's good to listen and be humble and to consider things deeply and hear people's lived experience. It's not
Be
necessarily
willing to be wrong.
healthy in the sense that, oh, because you are marginalized, everything you say is 100% right.
Well, even
Including.
yeah, because even then you have to prove whether they're marginalized or not. Like that individual, you know, any individual who's saying the thing. Yeah, I guess my question is, or the question I would ask in those circumstances, because I always ask questions, whether I agree or don't agree. I'm like, that's just how I learn, or that's how I've always learned as a child, and pretty much how I learn now. And it's, I know it's very Hebraic, it's very Greek, and obviously I grew up in the Bible, so I think I'm sort of steeped in that, like. I grew up around the Bible, so that, and then with parents who argued all the time. So then, even from the atheists in my life, you know, we're arguer people, argumentative people, ask questions. Is that like how? My question is, how does the new system of like the newest definition wins, or in terms of how semantics are regarded, like how does that benefit the powerless? To me, it seems a little similar to like abolishing the SAT, which turned out to actually really be bad because the SAT was one of those few things where, like, an intelligent student could actually achieve and kind of get their way out of the morass of like a poor education or like an underfunded school or whatever that you could still achieve there while having bad grades or poor academic or behavioral performance or whatever. That like you could go and nail the SAT if you were like just had if you were high IQ, if you were like able to process information fast or whatever. So you at least have this, they could verify this type of intelligence, which may be relevant in the academic setting or whatever. So likewise, I'm like, what's the, I feel like if you take away the guardrails, I feel like the guardrails are to protect against the powerful. Now this reflects my American bias, right? Which is the our whole Constitution is based on, and our Declaration of Independence is that rights are given by God, and it's really the government's job essentially to protect those rights. And then a lot of the stuff rights we enumerated are limiting how the government can do that, how the government can even regulate our rights. And so a lot of my thing is I was like, well, wait a second. The system of semantics classically has empowered people not to be able to manipulate the system as easily. Because once something's cited back to 1400, then you're like, oh, okay, well, at least here we have a good establishment of this is how people were using it. And this is how the people in writing were using it, and people across multiple disciplines were using it. And so that's what our that word in that language means. So that means when people come along and try to gaslight you and come up with a new thing and say, no, it means this, and you must listen to me, then that means the powerful win every time. Because then whatever they can and listen, people had this whole argument about around racism in 2020, I think it was late 2020, where one person like advocated on behalf of the novel definition of racism, meaning systemic, like sort of inherently tethered to. I mean, it can't mean systemic racism because that would make it a redundant statement to use systemic racism alongside racism, but to tether that to systemic understanding in 2020. One person like per advocated and Merriam-Webster, who I've often referred to as the Wokeionary, because they're super progressive in terms of and I would say sometimes regressive in that they just like a new one, new definition, we're bringing it in. We're bringing it in as soon as possible. Not waiting 10 years, not waiting 20 years, not waiting 50 years, just no, now. Which in the age of the internet, I think is a weird thing, but maybe it's fast reactive. There's arguments to be made why it makes sense.
Because we've
But
got
to
the
me,
Urban Dictionary, we've got other
yeah,
stuff.
we've got so many, right? And so, but I was like, doesn't, like, don't the systems in place protect the powerless from the powerful? Because the powerful have the most ability to manipulate language and just start just blanketing with use.
Well, one quick anecdote. I'm also reminded of going to college and arriving with a very thick American Heritage Dictionary,
Oh, yeah.
like this guy, and not a Bible. So I feel like it, my parents were
Yeah,
writers and teachers, and I feel like,
yeah.
gosh, I mean, writing, I guess, kind of was our religion.
Sure.
I'm just noticing that. Also, I don't know that we've named ourselves. I am Andy Swindler.
Oh, and I am Brendan McNamara, or at least that's how I have been referred to in the past. But again, if we're going to take the new novel definition of semantics, whatever my name tomorrow could be, it'll actually be my dominant name. So let's wait. But again, this is, and I say that somewhat jokingly, but that's also part of the system as well. That
And
like
it's
new, I think that's the, this is to me almost like the danger of conservatism is that you don't change things that are broken. And the danger of progressivism is that you build in systems of regression, that you just change things just to change things. And then you break things that aren't broken. So that's,
yeah.
again, this is why we need both of these instincts, which is let's keep innovating, you know? And I'm an artist, so I have that instinct within me, but I'm also like a logician. So then I kind of have those two things at war within myself constantly.
Yeah. Gosh, I'll hold off. Naming is a whole branch, right? That kind
Yeah.
of attaches to so many things, whether that's marriage or trans and dead naming or, so we'll maybe park that for a moment, but there's a lot there.
Yeah.
One thing I wouldn't ask you to define, because I don't know, you may be the first person I've heard really say this idea of a novel definition.
Yeah.
I kind of figured out what you meant by that, but could you just
Yes.
explain that?
Oh yeah, by novel definition, I simply mean it's a like we the reason I started using it was because we were saying it all the time, and well, we a ton of people, way more people than I'd ever heard use that phrasing in that to that purpose, were using it in 2020 because we had a novel coronavirus. So we had a novel coronavirus causing a worldwide pandemic. So people kept saying this is a novel coronavirus, and people would say, "Well, whatever, we dealt with coronaviruses before. We had SARS last time; it wasn't a big deal." People were like, "You don't understand. This is a novel coronavirus. That means
Unique, special.
this is new. Basically, all it means is new. This is the
Yeah.
new." So when people make a, this is what I've talked about when I talk about gender. I was like, the idea of gender being manipulatable by internal disposition or like claim, individual claim, is a novel understanding of gender. And even gender as a social construct is a novel proposition historically, meaning that even just talking about gender is like dealing with, like associated with social roles, as somehow you could consider it not separate, mind you, in this original citation in the 60s, it was like, oh, when you're a man, then there's all these obligations of what man means that are put upon you. And then that somehow is what gender meant. That is not what gender has meant throughout most history. It's not what gender means in common use now, today, in 2024. Throughout this nation, you'll still be filling out on a birth certificate gender, sex. Some people put, they're interchangeable terms. I think in a lot, to a large degree, one of the reasons people started using gender more dominantly, just separate from this concept, was that sex started becoming very associated with sex or sexuality. That became a novel conversation within our populace of like, oh, maybe homosexuality isn't coined in 1890s. We just looked up this morning. Maybe it isn't aberrant behavior. Maybe it's an entire different system that that people are born with, and we've got to wrangle with that. And so sex became very associated with sexuality. So it's not to confuse. Sometimes people would talk about people's sex as people actually started using gender more dominantly because of that. And so by the time someone came along and said that gender always meant a social construct, which is false, that's just false. Because we have these citations of what it was devised for. Then people got super confused. So novel is just, to me, it's like when the proposition it seems to be within progressivism is the newest, sometimes it's so novel it's not even cited yet. The newest definition is the most true. And even often claims this violates, I think, the system of knowledge, but they would say there are alternate forms of knowledge and knowing. It violates knowledge itself, meaning if you people have now said that gender was established as a system. I've seen this in multiple academic writings, that gender is like is a series of social constructs, and it was devised as a concept to do that. And that is false. That is objectively false by any ways we can know knowledge, meaning the use of the word in human history. You can go look at Oxford English Dictionary citations going back to the 1400s right now. Gender and sex have been synonymous in use. They remain synonymous in use. So to me, it's a very colonial, I've talked about this before with you, it's a very colonialist instinct where it's a small group of people coming in and saying, we don't care how you've been doing things. We don't care what your language is. We don't care about your bay, where that's where the water comes in to be embraced by the land and feed that. We don't care about that. That's not what it means. It means this now. And if you don't listen to what it means this now, then you will be silenced and punished. And we're seeing the silence and punishing, right? I sent you that thing last week from the Colorado House of Representatives, where someone didn't, they used what they best appraised as the gender of a person, and they linked pronouns. I don't know whether it's gender or sex. We haven't had that conversation in public. But they connected as best that they understood, and they were silenced. They literally weren't allowed to speak as a representative in the Colorado House of Representatives because they used the word, they used one of the names that this person had actually had on their criminal history, like in their, so that they literally referenced material, and this person used this name, and they said this name that this person had used, and then they weren't allowed to speak anymore. So they weren't allowed to use, they were literally ordered to, I would say they were ordered to misgender this poor person, or they were silenced. So we're seeing it already manifest in colonial fashion, and it seems like a colonial impulse. Again, I have a bias of being an Irish person, and then being here in the United States, where like people came in and put natives in schools and wouldn't let them speak their languages anymore, and tried to like essentially tried to like wipe out their language. And I never thought that was cool. And same thing in Ireland, where Irish was in danger of becoming an extinct language because the English would punish people and not allow them to speak it, especially if they came into school. They would beat them. They would literally like beat them when they spoke their own language. So to me, I'm seeing the same pattern in history repeat itself, where you're like, no, it's this new thing. And even and gaslighting as to like that's how it was constructed and what it's always meant. You're like, well, that's actually a novel. It's a novel proposal. It's a new proposal. It's a new idea.
Yeah, and then some of these, woke or I want to say revolutionary. I'm actually questioning. That's been my big question for the last several years, because I realized I was like hunting for the perfect revolution, and
I think we aren't we all, I think we all are.
I think so.
I think
But
it's
it
a
was very
healthy.
humbling to just realize, oh, it doesn't exist. This is messy. We're humans. We're inconsistent. We're
Keep
ridiculous.
looking. Yeah, keep looking.
But it's this, we have to be in it together. That's the only way. So one of my assumptions, so in those, in I'm struggling to even characterize what those kind of spaces are, but hopefully I'm clear enough. In those spaces, I think you would be shut down absolutely immediately by not accepting the idea that gender is a construct. And so let's go back to your question, which is a great one. Don't the systems in place protect the powerless from the powerful? So one of my assumptions is that the voiceless, perhaps AKA marginalized, feel in many cases that the only way to be heard is to change dominant language. And while I will say again, I experience myself as wildly open to it, I'm not in this moment convinced that it's a good long-term strategy, because it's just like it's trying to reverse, I think, to your point, just centuries of history.
And then, well, and then I just see the, yeah, to me, I see duplicity in it very often. We're again, looking at academic language, like it's simply false that gender was devised as a word or a concept to reflect the repetitions or social constructs around biological sex, being a member of a certain biological sex. They were synonymous in use and just kind of used poetically in literature, in Shakespeare, in scientific literature, whatever. They were just used interchangeably. They just kind of meant the same thing. One meant more kind of as a group. And gender really had its dominant use in terms of just language. It was gendered language is actually even it was like a super early definition. So it's just reflecting how other cultures do language, not even English. Like this is, we very early understood, oh, some people look at kind of the whole world in sort of like male and female energies or echoes or somehow associations or whatever. So then people are like, oh, the Italian social construction around what boat is. Is it feminine because it's a receptacle when you enter and it is sort of shaped? Oh, it's kind of vaginal. Or is it the prow is meant to be the penis? Or is it phallic? Is it male? And you're going out into the ocean just like a penis goes into a vagina? I don't know. Listen, but people had those associations, right? Very early on. So that's really what it was devised on. So to me, there's duplicity in it, and it's the shutting down thing. When anybody shuts down conversation, I immediately am like, oh, well, I don't really believe your perspective anymore. And I experienced that as a kid in the I would say in just a couple churches, and some Christian schools or whatever, that like when you question things, they get real tight and they just kind of try to shut you down. At which point I'm like, all right, well, you just, to me, you've lost all authority. And then I don't trust your motives anymore either. And so that's the pattern I kept seeing. So that where I was like, where again, I like new words being invented. I think that's the cool way to go. I've tried to invent slang myself many times, try to get it into the culture, see what happens. But when you change things that what we how we all use them, and then say that that's how they're like, you try to pretty much lie to people and say that they've always meant this one thing. That's where I'm just like, well, I don't know. At this point, you're in different ways of knowing, where then it becomes, to me, this was further proof of my thesis that this is like a Hindu style caste system within the space, where it says this is how it is in the outside world. It doesn't prove it, but just says it could be. There's some correlative evidence. I absolutely will agree with that, but doesn't prove it, but says that's how it is, and we're going to do things upside down, topsy turvy in this space, in a bunch of ways, but specifically in this sort of power dynamic, oppressed, marginalized, that sort of concept. But then in doing so, that means we're creating a concrete system wherein certain castes have more credibility when they speak than other people. So you're creating a supremacist system on purpose. And then those supremacists propose things. You're like, that's not how it is. And they're like, shut up. They shut up, you're wrong. So then I'm like, oh, okay, well, this just makes it likely. I'm not saying they're 100% incorrect, but that would make you likely to be wrong. Especially again, if you're going to be anti-colonialist, because that's a colonialist construct. So you're doing colonialism to fight colonialism. So you're fighting fire with fire, maybe, but then you're doing the wrong thing in order to achieve what? Like, I can't believe you're doing the wrong thing to do the right thing at that point. Okay. So I get lost rationally in the corner there, and I'm like, I don't see a way out. But what do you think?
So, a question. It seems to me that most of your comments and journeying here are related to, people grabbing this novel definition as a not only a fixed definition, but the only definition that's ever existed, perhaps.
Yeah.
Would you be open to, or have you actually engaged with folks that are doing more what you like to do? You said like invent slang. Have
Yeah.
you ever met anybody online that's like, oh, you know what, this is a new way of using this term, and there are reasons we want to do that. Is that
No, I mean, they definitely say, yeah, they're like language. So far, when anyone does engage on semantics, I think they don't heavily do so, only because it's a losing battle traditionally. You have to propose a new system of semantics, as I'm exploring here. And this is me trying to steel man, like, why no one will engage on that level. But they will just, multiple times, many different people have said, almost verbatim, that language changes, language evolves. So
yes,
there's
I
a
heard that last
presumption.
week.
Yeah. So presumption is, this is a false presumption about evolution. Is I think this is the rational fallacy people fall into, is that newer equals more evolved, and that's simply not how evolution works. Evolution is trying out different things, and eventually the one that works works. So new doesn't equal better. But we have this thing, I think, especially technologically, right? 11.0 is better. But you know what? It's funny. We've all used software. I remember, what is it? Final Cut 10 was great, and then 11 was terrible, and everybody didn't want to use it anymore. So we actually know that, like, and I don't know about you, every time I have to update on my computer, my laptop, I back everything up first, because I know any new operating system might wreck my shit.
It's always a risk.
It's
Absolutely.
always a risk, right?
Change is a risk. I hope we can all agree on that.
It is. It's always a risk. And so, because it blows up in your face sometimes. And then my laptop is a brick. That's happened to me in the past, where
And I'm very pro change, but I'm hopefully that's clear. And
Yeah,
I admit that
change is
it's a risk.
fun. Yeah. I'm actually more comfortable with change than without change. So for me, this is like, this in some ways, this is the adamance of a zealot, as a latecomer to the idea of like, oh, let's hold on to things that do work. Let's preserve things that do work, especially when the people proposing novel things are proposing new systems of how to make things work. When I'm like, I don't think your system's good. So I don't think I'm going to be on super board with you. But my question is like, so the phenomenon exists. We've kind of explained the phenomenon. We've talked a little bit about why the theory of why this exists. Do people within within those spaces, do they talk about this overtly, or does no one really discuss this overtly that we're trying to upend? Not just language, like meaning, oh, we've got to change these words, but the proposal is we're changing language, how we deal with semantics, like the study of language. It's an upside down proposal of how language is validated, I guess.
Again, so I'll just refer to one group in particular. It's a group of white male activists that at one point I was deeply involved with, and there's many things I learned and wonderful relationships I made, and we did volunteer work around Chicago and all sorts of things. And then there's sort of a, loosely organized national component. So I'm drawn there in this moment because I'm remembering one very specific conversation where it again, it always kind of carried this tone, especially with a group of white men, attempting to do like anti-racist and revolutionary work. There was always this tone that we must be learning from marginalized folks. And so usually it never exactly felt like, let's have a rigorous debate about this. It felt like somebody carrying the news in, like, ah, here's a new thing. And one that has shifted, even maybe one of the most recent phenomenons, is changing the idea from preferred pronouns to just pronouns. And I remember a really distinct moment, and there's guys who are like, it's their first meeting and they're kind of like, gosh, I don't know which end is up and what, what, how I'm supposed to code switch and what language I'm supposed to use and all that. And I will say, generally, the group was, I think, fairly gracious. I mean, that was part of the point, was to actually invite people in,
To join.
and to some extent indoctrinate into sort of this way of being. And I don't use that term necessarily as a bad thing. It's just sort of, I think, the characteristic of it. But that, and that even came up last week. My daughter's school, my wife and I are involved with actually bringing in a psychologist to talk about pronouns and pronoun usage. Which, if we want to go into that, I'm curious, because I know you just talked to your daughters about that. But this is, it's such a like fine point of minutia, right? This distinction even between preferred pronouns and pronouns. And the idea there is that by saying preferred, you're taking away the truth or the power of that, and you're actually continuing to other people, because it's like, oh, well, that's just kind of their preference. That's how they want to talk about it. But there was a moment, say in 2020, probably when all this stuff was really, getting big, or at least when I got more involved, or found some of these groups. I just feel like that was the year a lot of these groups formed or became more substantial. I mean, it was 100%. The first lesson was, you should use people's preferred pronouns. You should put your own pronouns on your things as a statement of solidarity, which is fascinating, because sometimes I see comments online now that are like, if people see you with pronouns, there's a whole huge slew of assumptions made about who you are, what you stand for, which,
It is.
frankly, some of which are probably true. But anyway, I'll pause there. Just, I feel like that is a fairly good example, even of how fast this is evolving, even within present circles.
And that to me seems incautious in terms of, maybe it's radically incautious in terms of forming group cohesion, because it's an intentional disruption of how language works, which means, again, this is language coming down from, this is kind of more how like fiefdoms or emperors or the Hindu caste system, kings. So the king decides this is what this means now, like whatever. I don't even know if this is true. This is apocryphal, right? That the foot, the English foot word comes, measurement comes from like whatever the king's foot was. That's what a foot was. So when we had a new king, the foot had to change. Now I don't know if that's even true. That's just like a silly example, but it's very similar, I've noticed, within y'all spaces, in that there is it is a rapidly changing. I won't say evolving. It's a rapidly. Or it is evolving, meaning it's not improving all the time. Sometimes it's getting worse and better, but it's really rapid, to where within a month or so, someone can kind of be behind and not know the new terminology.
I'm not convinced the Homo sapien is a successful evolution, by the way.
That's
The
true.
jury is out.
Yeah. I mean, we've lasted a while, but not really in terms of many other species. I mean, cephalopods alone. I mean, go on. So within that space, that seems my best steel man. Again, putting myself in as an actor into the position of the person making those decisions, I am effing with people. I'm puppet mastering for sure. Because there's no quantifiable thing of like constantly changing so much that you're confusing your own constituents on a regular basis, other than that your desire has to be either awareness of that confusion or you're creating that confusion on purpose. The difficulty also with the some people are more sacred than others concept, the supremacy, like intersectionalists cleave to a supremacist ideology, a systemically, because they incorporate it throughout. They're putting it in schools, they're putting it in written law. So it's systemic. We're well past that. It's a systemically biased system on purpose. So the problem becomes like how then, not that everything needs to be falsified, but certainly in terms of human claims that are novel proposals, how do you falsify their claims? Like the claim of the king. Like how do you So let's say a marginalized person who has never proven that they're marginalized, they just are associated with identities that have disproportionately poor outcomes. So we don't know if that person's a marginalized person. Just the same way you walk into a Catholic church you've never been to, and the person walks up wearing a priest's outfit. Is that the priest? It could be a con man. You have no idea. You've never been there before. You don't know. So you're just sort of assuming, right? I'm assuming this person's marginalized because they're black as heck. They're probably even faced colorism, right? They are dark. They've been made fun of by high yellow Negroes all the way through the 1990s. They always wanted to be kid, and they were play. They, how do you falsify any of their claims? Like, how do you say, hey, no, that's not right? Like, what methods do you have when historicity is taken? At least in the arguments I've had, semantics, like demonstrable semantics, are taken away. What, and then you can't bring your lived experience to bear because in a lived experience versus lived experience fight in the system, you lose. So that's my question. Like, how do you prove that that person's claim to be incorrect? Like, what means do you have left?
Well, for me, it's all about the lived experience. Like, that's like my life's mission is to have enough spaces where we can really hear from each other. Now, does that prove that they're marginalized systemically? Does that justify shifting language in these ways? I don't know. Like, it's hard for me to connect all those dots, but to me, it's just about having enough space and compassion to be with each other and to know each other. And that's obviously we've known each other a long time, but that's part of what we do in this space is just know each other better. And we do merge it with as best we can rational, arguments about how these things relate. By the way, I think a second ago I might have said Homo sapien, which clearly that's Homo sapien, but I think it was a funny little slip because the term homeostasis
Homeostasis.
is an important concept biologically because we are wired to resist change, arguably. Many organisms are, at least mammals, and so that's a concept here that I don't see merged much is this idea that like we the revolutionary claim would be like we must change. Some people are just full on, let's burn it all down. But at a biological level, that's not what's going on. We actually seek consistency, and we that's how we feel safe. In many
So
ways.
then if we so then those who are seeking radical change are or could be accused of perpetrating a system of intentional harm somatically. So then if you're provoking people who don't want to change, homeostasis, if that's our natural inclination, then trying to propose a system of not only continual change, but then actually social change. This is in many ways, I think the proposal of the modern progressive movement is just like CRT proposed. It was sort of questioning legal incrementalism, classical liberalism. But I think it goes beyond questioning and saying like that was the worst. That's not the correct path, right? It could be adjacent to it. It's not saying it's antithetical. But I think likewise, this movement, this proposal is a counter enlightenment. We elevate. And again, I grew up in a society where, as a Christian, I was already counter enlightenment. So I had to understand the Enlightenment and steel man every aspect of the Enlightenment in order to function as a human being in a humanist. That was our common ground, right? Muslims, Jews, Buddhists, Christians, atheists, agnostics, we all sort of were like, well, we all understand the good parts of the Enlightenment. And the good parts of the Enlightenment were human reasoning. I'm just literally quoting. It was thought during the Enlightenment that human reasoning could discover truths about the world, religion, and politics, and could be used to improve the lives of humankind. Benefit, right? Skepticism about received wisdom was another important idea. Everything was to be subjected to testing and rational analysis. Religious tolerance and the idea that individuals should be free from coercion in their personal lives and consciences were also Enlightenment ideas. Now, all those ideas are antithetical functionally to the proposal we're discussing here. It's again, it's going back to a feudal, kind of a feudal system. So then this is the problem. We have a lived experience that makes claims beyond their lived experience, right? No one has a lived experience of the foundation of the word gender. None of us existed. We weren't around. That word's been around since in English in the 1400s, in human beings since 2600 BC, in terms of written language in Sumeria. So we weren't there for that. So we have no ex lived experience as to any claims as to truth beyond the sphere of our ability to reckon, like to look at things. So then anything we're talking about is in reference to some other piece of material, oral, whatever, like it's all a trust basis. So this is the problem with like lived experience versus lived experience. You can't have a hierarchical system if lived experience is your new objectivity, because then ultimately whoever has power in any situation will use it and abuse it. Now, not all of them, not every single person, but dominantly that is what will happen. And then it makes it so if you're a powerless person then in the intersectional system, then pretty much you're like a person on the opposite end if that entire systemic structure existed. So then you're doing the exact same thing you're saying you're trying to undo. You just flipped it upside down. So it's not different. It's just that you're doing the same thing you said was bad functionally. So then, you know what I'm saying? So that's the problem is like people are making claims well beyond their lived experience.
Certainly I see a reversal of the power dynamics, and that's been a sadness of mine to notice just energetically. It's hard to de define in some ways. I just
No, it isn't. It's a
feel like I
it's a
sense it and
sensation.
feel it, and it's like, oh, that's pretty much the same energy pattern just forming in a different direction. I'm not to the point where you suggested that this is creating systemic harm, or at least not intentionally. However, I do believe it's just a bad strategy because it's in many cases creating more resistance. And so, if the intention is to meet people, change hearts and minds, a lot of people say that's not enough. I should agree. We need to go into the systems. Say, and I know we disagree on a lot of this, but let's say there are laws on the books that are systemically unjust. And we do change those, and we can change those. And we've thankfully at least built a system where that's possible. My thing is, well, we have to meet each other and either change hearts and minds or at least kind of agree to disagree and find the path where we could at least agree on where harm is systemically and then change the systems to address that. And I at this point, and these conversations have helped me see that I think a lot more people with different ideological positions actually want that than maybe the progressives or the revolutionaries believe is true. And so there's this like pushing against that. I've just really started to question in the last few years.
Well, it's very interesting to see. My claim of harm in that one we were talking about was really just in regards to if homeostasis is a fact of human existence, then that means you're causing a stress response intentionally by inventing a system where things are constantly changing, preferred pronouns, blah blah blah, like blah, blah, blah. You're creating a system of very constant, like rapid, almost rabid change, and you're telling people to unfetter from. I think the Enlightenment in the Western world is one of the most influential movements of human thought that exist. So you're then unmooring people from classical liberalism, and then also really from Enlightenment positioning. And then you're unmooring them from, hey, check the dictionary when you want to know what a word means. And then you're unmooring them. I mean, that is. And then you're also saying if you don't start speaking in our language, you're not allowed to speak anymore. You'll be silenced. Up in Canada, they're starting to put people in jail. UK, someone just went to jail for years over like not using the new language. Then I don't know what systemic harm is anymore. If you're doing that somatic level of challenging, and again, I'm not opposed to harm, right? Again, I'm a Christian, and the premise of Christianity is you die. It is from a certain perspective, from a pre-born again perspective, Christianity is you die to yourself. You pick up your cross daily, you suffer and die to yourself. So again, I'm not beyond, or I don't find radical proposals like unnerving. But to me, when those radical proposals also then dismiss piece by piece the means by which you might resist this, even to the point where it's as far as I've understood society as an outsider, liberalism and the Enlightenment are kind of like key components that everyone agreed on. And you're taking all the things and going, no, we're going to do this upside down. We're going to do this different. Then that is, at least in the somatic sense, right? In the sense that you're causing a traumatic response. And I was like, and I don't even know what the outcome is. Like, what's the proposed outcome? So the proposed outcome is then now all the newest definition wins. Because then, so then all you're going to do is incentivize people to radically propose new definitions and get as many people to agree with their new definitions as often as possible, which means language will start changing as rapidly, if not more rapidly, than even it does presently in the progressive spaces. So then I'm like, when someone makes a novel claim, right, about gender being devised to do that, like how within that space, like how do you refute it? The same way, like in a Christian space, for example, someone makes a novel proposal about what this and that scripture means. Generally, what you have is you go to the Bible and you go to the original languages. You're like, well, in the original Greek, here's the best understanding of Greek, here's the best understanding of Hebrew. You can kind of look at historical precedent, somewhat relevant, not really. You could look at the great arguments of great men of the past. But you would debate and reason it out. So you would actually use some of the tools that the Enlightenment also brought forth, or classical liberalism relies upon. So then I'm like, what are the tools then internally by which everyone gets a fair shake? Because that's, I hope, the goal is actual equality in that sense. Like everyone gets at least the equal opportunity to use those tools. Now, whether they're good at using those tools or not, is that's up to genetics and rearing and whoever they are as a person, whatever they've decided to spend their time getting good at. And maybe speaks my own paranoia as I say that, because I've spent my whole life getting good at argument and reasoning. And because I'm like, that's how the world works. It's not how I work functionally. That's not how God works always, but tangential to it, certainly. And now I'm like, so the proposal now is like, everything that you're good at, throw out. And I'm like, okay, I don't think I want to do that, but maybe. But then what do I replace that with? Like, what's my tool then? What's my tool then to be victorious in understanding or refuting, fighting tyranny or authoritarianism or fighting things that are bad? Like how what are the tools within the framework that I'm left with if those are gone? What do we got?
Oh, that's a good question. I think I'm anti-enlightenment, but I probably need to learn more about it. I do, let's call myself an anti-colonial intuitive anyway, and I think that's a dynamic we've addressed here a number of times. And I appreciate that. It's easy, I guess, to see the world and want everybody to see it the way we do, which is kind of, as you're saying, I think colonial. And not just to see it the way we do in terms of like, oh, like let's agree on the same history book, but feel it the way we do, like move through it the way we do, like absorb it the way we do. Like and it is something I appreciate. So I have a more intuitive approach. I have a more feeling approach. And I think that's really important. And I actually think we don't do that enough. Maybe that's my resistance to the Enlightenment. And I realize how much just ridiculous stuff is out there. We've said in other episodes, This is our discussions have helped me realize that I was kind of a headline reader and a headline passer. And that's really dangerous
It can be, yeah.
in this day and age.
Yeah.
Well, assuming anybody's actually paying attention, but it's probably
Yeah.
the quickest way that sort of false and irrational, information gets passed around. So I think what you and I stand for is this, is coming together, kind of turning the Rubik's Cube as many times as we can,
Yeah.
seeing our different ways of seeing the world. So I would say rationality isn't and can't be the whole way and the only way. But I don't think you say that either. That's why we're here, is to sort of look at
No,
things
yes,
differently.
yeah.
The point I guess I'm making is there is some amount of that that is very helpful when we see things so differently, to having, we have to have some framework. I mean, unless maybe the future evolution of our species is we just become, I don't know, telepathic and enlightened and all of that, and we just sort of, I don't know, sense each other and I don't know, function. I always want to say like function like ants, but it's like, oh my God, ants are one of the most hierarchical species we know of. But one thing that's wandering around for me in this conversation is just to think about history, as you've delved into more deeply than I do, than I have for this, and you often do, is the nature of the English language. I mean, if we think about even that time period you're quoting, like 1400s, who had access to language? How was that used to divide caste systems and power structures? I feel like the printing press was a massive shift in who had access. Anyway, I don't mean to like unpack, 10 new topics, but that's it seems like the very history of, let's just say, the English language, maybe any language, but certainly the English language, is rooted in these power dynamics of who had access to it.
And then but the thing is, we can conjecture that, and there's the salient, you'd have to prove that rationally, and I think there's plenty of evidence to support your claim. But then we know the proposal currently is rooted in power dynamics, because you've lived in the actual, you've had the lived experience of being within these spaces which are rich with power dynamics. So then we're not changing that, really. It's just a different, it's different people wielding power as oppressively as we've seen in the modern era.
And to answer your question more specifically a minute ago, I personally, and granted, even as much as time as I've spent in revolutionary spaces, that's still a tiny drop in the ocean.
Oh,
I
for sure.
have found few of them that, let's say it's a stark rarity or minority where there's a vigorous debate about language or some of these concepts. Saying it doesn't exist somewhere, I'm just
Sure,
saying.
somewhere.
By the time I showed up, it was like, nope, this is our way of being. This is the way we're doing things.
And then how? Two questions quickly. Like, okay, so if you have intuition versus intuition, but you have differing intuitions, how do you validate, or even with your own, if that's what you're like, if that's the primary source within the space, how do you validate whose intuition is accurate if it's a collective intuition? Like, if it's intuition for anyone besides you? Because again, the spaces you're in generally frown on intuition, especially as it comes to determined by gender, misgendering, etc. It says, shut up, your intuition is malarkey, and you're actually a hateful person if you rely upon your intuition.
In the
You have to
context of
actually.
you showing up and saying, you're a man. Everything about my 45 years on this planet tells me, every sense I have tells me you're a man.
Even, yeah, that's it. So it's beyond intuition, but the intuition, certainly more than anything, I think, is the most dominant recognition system that tells somebody whether someone's a man or a woman. Because it's not about what they, oh, they're wearing a dress. And that is often associated with, you're into the rational mind. It's intuition. You're just flipping, like, you can't even describe how. The same way they might say, well, I know beyond how. So, and then you just have those two claims battling. That's just one example. But like, how do you, because eventually people are going to disagree. And then, so then you're just left with like majoritarianism, or you're left with a like a pure democracy system, or you're left with a hierarchical power system where in certain people there's a supremacist system. And to me, it seems supremacist most of the time. So then I was like, it's a supremacist proposition based on the the assumption that previous all systems previously were supremacist, and so we're going to do another supremacist system, but we think they did their supremacist system wrong. So it's not the supremacist systems are wrong, it's your one was wrong. Our supremacist system is good, and it will fix the problems that your supremacist system did, I think. I'm trying, if I can try to understand it. But I was like, how do you, yeah, how do you falsify then? Like, how does the collective recognize the powerless, the voice of the powerless in that situation? Because that's what language has offered us. Language is the means by which people could gain power, and you could invoke previous precedent legally, semantically, whatever, and you could beat the powerful. Like, that's how these are the tools by which people resist subjugation. And so if you're going to, take the system away, you have to replace it with something wherein the powerless can resist subjugation, or else you're just building a better system of supremacy that's harder to resist because you've taken away all the tools and given people no tools. You're trying to take away the tools, and you've given people no tools to fight. So to me, I was like, this is why I'm scared of progressivism generally, is I was like, it seems like kind of more like Sharia law, or if like the Christian church just like really took over and was like, if you don't like say Jesus is Lord, then you can't talk in the House of Representatives, where it's like religious test, that sort of thing. And I was like, oh, and I'm a Christian dude, so I like in some ways should be like, oh, maybe this will bring about a great awakening. But to me, I'm like, I don't know. I don't think it's gonna work. I don't think it's gonna work. Like, it seems like you're taking things away from people. You're taking, but then at least to me, I was like, well, that what you'd replace it with is the Bible. So then they have to believe the Bible, which not everyone's gonna want to do, but you're forcing it on them anyway. But then at least they have the Bible by which they can be like, well, no, look, it actually says this here. This is why The Handmaid's Tale, I always thought was like such a dumb, the TV show, and it was dumb as hell, because it was like, wait a second, they're supposed to be Christians or whatever. The Christians have always been able to fight by the Bible, and what they're doing, it directly violates the whole premise of it, is directly in violation of scripture, like fundamentally. So I was like, oh, at least they had that, but then they've taken that away. So I was like, oh, that's how you know they're actually, this has nothing to do with Christian fundamentalism. This is just authoritarianism. And then they're saying, we're the only ones that can interpret this mass in Latin or whatever, kind of thing. So I was like, what's the replacement? And then you, by virtue of being a white man in those spaces, are the subjugated, right? By virtue of identity is important. So then what tools do you have as a person to then, when something is wrong, your intuition, let's say, says it, like, how can you demonstrate it if you've taken those tools away?
Well, in my experience, that didn't go well. I mean, I've spoken before, and yeah, I mean, I'm recognizing in this moment, it's like, gosh, I mean, there was a moment when, something I was involved with was called into question, and it wasn't handled in a restorative way. I had asked, I was invited for a meeting with one leader. I took that in good faith, tried to set that meeting up. 2 weeks later, I was facing a tribunal. It was just, I'm just recognizing that there's a scar there, and the nature of scars is they heal over, but they're still there. So I'm trying to sort of, think about my lived experience, but also try to expand beyond that, and certainly not assume that's how all spaces are. That'd be preposterous. But that was part of my experience, is matching what you're saying. I think to go back to a question before that you asked, I mean, part of the idea of like trauma work and sitting in circle together is trying to get to the deepest layer of emotion and vulnerability. And, that is hard to describe in rational terms. Although I do think the trauma work is coming along enough that it's now being backed by medical science, and there are studies connecting trauma to diseases and all sorts
Oh,
of things.
for sure.
So I think the best answer I can give, and like, how would you build an intuitive governance structure, is a fascinating question I'm gonna carry away from this. I mean, I've studied numerous, especially collaborative and non-hierarchical governance structures, and
Yeah, more than anyone I know, you have.
I wouldn't say any of them seem to depend on intuition. But the nature of a circle does. I mean, the geometry of a circle is implicitly inclusive, and where you literally can see everybody's eyes, and especially in the sense of the one I like, which also has been criticized as being appropriative, but in any case, where you pass a talking stick around, as somebody who's also shy, we might say introverted, although I prefer more of like the energy reclamation definition of that word. But let's just say shy and not like outspoken. I love the idea of a circle where we pass a talking stick, because then I know it's going to get to me and I can take my time. I have this chance to speak. One-on-ones are great too if the person's respectful. Like, here, feel you're more outspoken than me, but I never feel like I can't speak here by any stretch. And so how would that translate? I think it's, it's, I don't know that the goal is like actually consensus. I think the goal is like, how can I express my deepest truth and emotion and feeling here? And then once enough people do that, there's this like shared sense of vulnerability where something else can emerge. And I think what stands in the way, or why we like depend on rationality, is because we haven't gone to that space and we're trying to like solve things by like calculating the answer. In my experience, and I haven't necessarily found this in the revolutionary spaces, but in the circle, whereas we can get to this level of vulnerability, and some of that shielding falls away. And then once we're sort of more honest with each other about who we are and how we've been hurt and how we feel, hopefully like entirely new ideas can emerge from that about how we can be together.
Well, yeah, that's what's funny. That's where I've always, I would say, that similar spaces to progressive spaces I've been drawn to is I think that that's actually what they're helpful for in the realms of nurture. So I think to me, I was like, where I see a lot of the malnourished aspects are when that tries to move into system creation. I was like, you're actually not, I just don't think they're, I don't think they're good at it. I was like, to me, this is, and I've said this before, but I've always been like, Democrats should figure out what the problems are, and then Republicans should fix them. And then Democrats really should mostly stay away from fixing them. And Republicans, maybe you can mostly stay away from the problems. And you might have crossover. There's going to be a light crossover, maybe a 20% crossover on either side, because that's the being, like being and being honestly and being openly and not being, and I like talking stick or whatever, because like the biggest concern I see is the shutdown, is the constant shutting down, and you did this wrong, and that's not how we say it now, and that's the thing. And I was just like, it to me, it seems again, it's like a deliberate, it's a deliberate trying to keep you off balance on purpose. It's like it's very military, right? It's like I got to break you down to nothing, and then rebuild you. Though I'm like, okay, so you're gonna rebuild me the way you want. That doesn't seem very me centric. That doesn't seem very holistic. But the idea of sitting in space in together in a circle in a non-hierarchical sense, that's what I don't see. I think in progressivism general it's like a phenomenally hierarchical proposition. So then I love that aspect, and I've always been drawn to that aspect and sitting in circle or whatever, ayahuasca or hippie stuff, man, all the cool hippie stuff, man. Let's just get together, let's figure out what are we even saying, who are you, who's even saying, do you even exist, are you even a who, are we a we? Are we a wee man? Let's think about it. You know, that stuff I
Well,
think
make
is
love,
so
not war.
helpful. Yeah, man. Just think it. Just feel it. Just feel it, man. And then that makes a lot more sense. In which case, semantics can't in the small enough space. I think once it gets past like 20 people, though, you're already in a dangerous spot. Semantics can be fluid, at least at that point, in terms of like, oh, this is how, but then you're not saying this is what this word means. It's a different argument. You're saying this is how I've used this word.
And one of the danger zones there, to me, it's about like truth doesn't always feel good. In fact, it probably often doesn't feel good. So there's this idea of spiritual bypass. So if the goal people have of like sitting in circle is to feel good, or even to reach total consensus, that might limit the amount of truth and vulnerability that's revealed.
Well, especially seeking whatever homeostasis for appropriate, and this is maybe the homeostasis problem related to the modern world in terms of our, I'm holding up my phone right now, the dopamine machines. Means we're even more provoked when things produce whatever the opposite is, drain our dopamine. You know, and you're like, you're not pleasuring me.
Yeah.
This is why I think 2020 is the rising point for all these things, because we're at least here in any lockdown in any country where the government locked us down deeply inappropriately. They that forced, or I wouldn't say forced, but it compelled a great many people into a far heightened degree of virtuality, where you're able to control that flow. So then the idea of sitting in vulnerability was like, not at all. Hardly anybody was getting into that zone. People were very much like feeding themselves, feeding their eyes, feeding their ears, feeding their mouths. I struggled with it myself. Like I totally get it. It had to be a, I had to actually very carefully like separate myself from other people and virtuality on a daily basis in order to kind of get through that lock, especially the lockdown period.
Yeah.
But
Well,
yeah, finding ourselves is beautiful.
need to come in for a landing.
Let's do it. This might be a
Beautiful.
part two. We haven't done a part two in a long time.
Maybe. I know you had a lot of notes. There's probably lots of things we didn't get to. So maybe a provisional answer is progressiveness in its search of improvement, seeking to establish a new system of semantics. I think that was so close-ish to the formation.
Yeah.
I think yes. I mean,
Yeah, that seems to be the proposal.
yeah.
It seems to be what's going on. And my only thing is, the whole thing is this, why, like, people just need to be talking about this. Because I think that's what I felt tricked about it. I felt like it was kind of duplicitous that no one was talking about it. Because I was like, this is the most radical element. It's not saying, you just don't understand, you think girls have to be this way and boys have to be this way, and you think you know. Like, it was all this surface. I was like, wait a second. So just go two layers down. And what you're proposing is like a, this is a radical proposition. And people just pretending like it's just like a normal or flow or like just like a compassionate way to just flow forward. I don't think that's the case with anybody really, other than if you're just kind of going, if you're a go along person, you know what I mean? Then you went
I
along with that.
hear it's created a lot of friction for you, like that this isn't doesn't seem to be happening out there in the conversation, at least not very much.
Yeah, no one's
Might
really.
be you might, if this were the conversation, you'd be like, oh, well, let's talk about that. If you're
This is at least fundamental. Well, because to me, it's just like, it's the, and I understand people do this or whatever, and I've probably been guilty of it before, but it's just, it's not reasoning or moving forward or engaging in good faith to just like know that you have some radical presuppositions that you have, and then you're just going to push forward as though they're not radical. And I say this as someone who's been a Christian in an atheistic society or a professed atheistic society most of my life, that it'd be ridiculous of me not to pretend that there aren't radical elements of the Jesus proposal. Like that's, it would seem disingenuous. Like, and so I think that's what I've been struck by. I was like, why? This is really big stuff that people are trying to subvert, but it seems trotted out in a way that's very like piecemeal or. I don't know. It's the stuff I hate about Christian evangelism. Really, let's be honest. It's the same stuff I've disliked my whole life, where they're kind of like, oh, we'll just come in a little closer, and you're kind of drawing in with things that are kind of true, but not really true. And then eventually you kind of like wham people at the end with like the hard stuff. I was like, that feels tricky. I feel like you're trying to trick people into getting into the church. And then 6 weeks later, once they feel like you have a family, then you hit them with the hard truth. And at that point, they're afraid to lose their family. So then you're just trying to manipulate them. Like, that's gross. Like, I don't like that. Don't do that. But hey, but
I know.
two thumbs up. Love you.
Love you too. Bye.
Mwah.